Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week. As always, friends, Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, we're going to waste no time here on the NOLA Drinks Show this week getting things started. Going to kick things off with our featured interview here. That's the entirety of the show, our French Quarter Fest series installment number 2. We partner with the finest music festival in the world, French Quarter Fest, April 11th through the 14th here in town, and the finest record store in the world, Friends Louisiana Music Factory, there at 421 Frenchman Street. This time around, we're interviewing two sets of great musicians, Dr. Bryce Miller, a fine jazz player and educator here in town, as well as two members of the band Waterseed, Lou and Shalia, a fantastic funk band here in town. We're going to talk drink, we're going to talk food, we're going to talk culture, and of course, music, friends. So we're going to jump right over there to Louisiana Music Factory after this short break on the NOLA Drink Show, friends. Come on back. Hey, friends, Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. Agave Week is back with its new headquarters at the Ace Hotel in downtown New Orleans. Week-long events kick off Sunday, March 10th with tequila and mezcal tastings, seminars, panel discussions, and one-of-a-kind parties. Visit NOLAAgaveWeek.com for tickets and info. The Grand Tasting is the third annual Top Taco with unlimited gourmet tacos and cocktails from some of the best restaurants in the city. It's happening at Waldenburg Park Thursday, March 14th from 7 to 10 p.m. For tickets and info, visit TopTacoNOLA.com.
When the sun sets, I'll be sealing.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show this week. As always, yeah, it is the second installment of our French Quarter Fest series. We are here at Louisiana Music Factory, 421 Frenchman Street. Yeah, the finest record store in the world. And we're going to be talking about the finest music festival in the world, I would argue. Pleased to be joined by my next guests, Dr. Bryce Miller. Bryce, how are you?
Good morning. Happy Saturday. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. Yeah, this is whatever people listen. It's Monday on the radio whenever they listen to the podcast, yeah. But we're on a Saturday.
I'm all lovely. Good to be here, my friend.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate you taking some time. And also Lou and Shalia from Waterseed. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's happening? Thanks for having us.
Right. Yeah. Glad to be here.
Yeah, a lot of fun having you all here. Thanks.
And
When folks are hearing this, we're out. You know, we're after the holidays. We're actually really in carnival at this point. When folks are hearing,
is that right?
So yeah, so we got to
happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras. We got to put our carnival hat on at this point. But let's start here because we're going to talk to you all about music. We're going to talk about drinking food and some other stuff. But Bryce, maybe let me kick this to you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your background, because I mean, you're a musician, but you're also an educator, and I know a lot of your emphasis is actually on education.
Yes.
How'd you get into music? How'd you get into education?
Born and raised, my dad is a jazz musician. My dad is one of the founders of Pinstripe Brass Band.
Yeah, okay.
Which is, Pinstripe Brass Band was one of the brass bands in the 1970s that helped to kind of usher in a new generation in new interest towards brass bands. Mm-hmm. And Pinstripe grew out of Doc Pawlin's brass band from the late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. So I essentially grew up in this music. My house was a house of rehearsal. For many musicians, my dad also played jazz and funk and a lot of different styles of music. So, I mean, just since I was in diapers, I've been around it, and never really got into sports. Music was just something I was always pulling, you know, by my dad's side, second lines, etc. And then, honestly, you know, like what I tell young people is that parading with my dad at a young age, man, my dad was like a rock star. He and all the members of Pinstripe, you know, there was a second line on Sunday or a party, whatever. Everybody knew them. You know, they call my dad, his nickname is White, because his name is Dwight, but they call him White. And he's from the Calio Housing Project. But everyone knew them. I mean, they were like rock stars. So it was like, man, this is cool, you know? This is really cool. And then I started playing, I used to take piano lessons at Worldlines, and then started playing drums at Cohen Middle School, which was in Ninth Ward, where currently the Musicians Village is located. It used to be Cohen Middle School. Mm-hmm. I started there with Jared McGowan and then went to Bell, Andrew J. Bell, and studied with Mr. Donald Harrison. And from there, I got a scholarship to St. Augustine High School, mm-hmm. where I had the opportunity to study with Mr. Edwin Hampton. And the funny thing about that was Mr. Hampton was a Xavier University graduate. He was a military man. And I was just really inspired by just what he built at St. Ol. got a scholarship to Xavier University, a partial scholarship, because Lou and I went together. I'm not going to give folk the impression that there's a lot of money going on at Xavier.
That's right.
So I got a partial scholarship to Xavier and actually studied music education and became a band director. And I chose that path because, you know, my parents couldn't stand it because they wanted me to study like pharmacy, or, you know, a guaranteed job, something that's going to bring me some good money. But all my influences were my band directors and my father. My father is my number one hero. So you think of all those people dealing with music. And I would say that was kind of my introduction with it. And it's always been this 50-50 professional musician, educator. I've always had a foot in education.
So, Bryce, was that because then, as you said, your dad and then the influence of some of the educators that you came up underneath with, you were really attracted to that side of tutoring people and mentoring people and things, is that?
Exactly. And seeing the power of what music and culture could do. You know, I mean, we grew up in the 90s, you know, and New Orleans was rough when you talk about crime and drugs. And I mean, it was rough, man.
It was vicious.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was scary, you know. But seeing that music, and especially marching band, was something that could take the most toughest cat in school and humble him. You know, you had to be disciplined, you know. Just because you were 6'5" and had been in a 10th grade for 6 years, that didn't, you know, that didn't make you the leader of the band.
Right.
You know,
right.
If you were not section lead and somebody said attention, you had to stand at attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just seeing the influence of what music could truly do. Mm-hmm. And it's something I've dedicated my life to. I've never made much money doing it. But again, I've been able to really have some major influence, feel like I've had some major influence throughout my tenure as both an educator and just a mentor.
That's great.
You know.
Lou, what about you and Shaleo? How did you guys find yourselves in Waterseed and doing music? Let's back up a little further there.
Well, it's funny. Bryce mentioned we went to Xavier together.
Right. I didn't know that.
Yeah, see? There you go. And both music majors, same year.
Mm-hmm. Partial scholarship?
Yes, partial scholarship.
he didn't go to St. Aug, though.
I didn't do the St. Aug route, but and they got me for that, too. Because a lot of St. Aug brothers.
the year we got to Xavier, I think it was like five or six of us.
It was
St.
a lot of y'all.
It was a big they group got from St. Aug that went to Xavier.
But it was all love, though. They, you know, it was normal stuff, so it was not bad. But Waterseed started on Xavier's campus. Bryce was a great student. He went straight through school and went on to get his master's. I was not that guy. I thought I knew it all, so I'm like, I don't need this. After 2.5 years in, I jumped ship and played music a little bit. And then went back a few years later to finish my degree. But Waterseed started on Xavier's campus as a production writing team.
Okay.
With myself and two other Xavierites. And it just kind of grew from there. You know, we wrote for a few people. They performed a song. We thought it wasn't very good the way they performed it. And so we just, you know, kicked into a full band and did that thing. And it's just grown from there, you know. Brings us up to, I guess, Hurricane Katrina. Get washed out to Atlanta. And we met Shaleo there.
Hey.
And she joined on as vocalist and, do her thing. So.
Yeah.
And Shaleo, where are you from then, originally?
I'm originally from Houston.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to Clark Atlanta University, and that's why I was in Atlanta, and that's how I ended up meeting Waterseed.
Cool. And so were you studying music, or how did you get into vocals?
Actually,
and what you do?
I was a solo artist, just doing my thing around the city, and I guess Waterseed had heard my name because they were holding an audition for a new vocalist. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we saw a video of her online performing at, I think it was in East Village or somewhere.
Yeah, East Village. Yeah.
Performing, and we thought she had a lot of energy and everything, so, you know, we approached her.
That's cool. So you guys were looking to grow the band and add a vocalist. Is that how that
Correct. Happened? Correct. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, can you guys describe, and I always hate to make people say, you know, what is your genre? Mm-hmm. Put yourself in a box, of course.
Right.
But what are some, maybe a good way to put it is, what are some influences on your music? Maybe
first let me I can answer the first question.
Okay.
So we have our own genre. We call it future funk. So
all right, sweet.
And what I can say that are some of our influences are anybody from R&B, if that's what the box people want to put us in, used to be a much broader category. You know, you bought a Stevie Wonder album and he had everything, every type of music on it, but just with, you know, a soulful kind of spin to it. And right. I guess in the bigger sense of the word, people have categorized us as R&B. We've been categorized as jazz sometimes, but the limitation of the industry has just kind of created has made it more complex in what we are. But we're, you know, we're, I guess you can say, the the birth of, like, you know, of where R&B was, with everything from, you know, what James Brown and everybody else was doing nowadays. I guess James Brown would be in a different category from Stevie Wonder, you know, but it's right. You know, so if you think about traditional music, you know, R&B with a futuristic spin on it, that's who we are. So cool. We're from New Orleans, so it's very hard to come in and do one genre, because, you know, they teach you to play everything. They're like, you got to play everything well. So
yeah, and that's a great point. And, mm-hmm. you know, that in New Orleans, and I always want to be careful, because none of this stuff ever happens in a vacuum, right? And especially in this town, all the different genres, all the different styles of musician that we have, all the different aspects of culture. Mm-hmm. You can't separate these things. That's why we do music on this show.
Right.
We're normally about drinking food.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can't separate drinking food from music. Not here.
No, that's, you can't. You can't.
That's
can.
My thought.
Is the those are the three primary things people come into the city for.
Yeah. So,
and the thing with the music is that, you know, by New Orleans being a live music city, and by that meaning just the plethora of spaces where you can hear live music, you know, something I learned very early is that it's important that the musicians have the diversity to be able to play not what may always be in your repertoire, but to a certain extent to play what the people have come to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, what I use, for example, if you, let's say you're playing at one of these clubs here on Frenchman, right? You have two opportunities. You can either pull people into your space, your genre, whatever the case may be, bring them into your bag, and or if they're not feeling your bag, do I end the show or do I meet them where they are? And I use that, for example, last year we were playing the Spotted Cat, and it was Sugar Bowl, or maybe the year before. Right. It was one of those years that University of Alabama was playing, right?
Yeah.
And I have a lot of Alabama friends. I taught there for 6 years. But trying to get an audience like a Tennessee or Ohio, you just think of these sports mecca towns. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all these, you know, 100,000 folk who come here for the game. You know, they may not really give a damn about Didn't You Ramble, you know, or the things that turn us on, you know, or Hey Pocky Way or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you may try it, but then you're
That's
like, well, this
point.
Ain't working. Yeah. You know, 10 people and walked out right quick. What do we need to do? Mm-hmm. So you have to have that ability to have the diversity to kind of meet people where they are. That's just my stance at music, you know, and that's something that I've done. Like, you know, they play future funk. You know, what I do with my groups is I've created this thing called New Trad, you know, which is what I call modern traditional jazz, because I'm a traditional jazz trumpet player. I grew up in that, you know, and I have much honor to it. I don't want it to just, it's important that we hold on to the legacy in some way, but I've always had this struggle that, you know, I grew up with Two Live Crew, man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I grew up with Run DMC.
Yeah, right. You want to play that too. Yeah.
So not only do I want to play it, but that's what my peers, that's what's hitting the ears of my peers. You know, even today, you know, whether it's, you know, Avery Sunshine that they're listening to, or if it's it's Anderson, you know, what's the cat name?
Anderson Paak.
You know what I mean? Whatever's popular, but that's what my peers are into. So my whole thing is, how do I pull them into my world while still showing some homage to where they are? And that's how I created New Trad. And man, it's been working for us like a mug. People love it. You know what I'm saying? Because it's nowhere else. You're not going to hear too many other bands playing a bounce beat with all of me.
Right.
Ah. There you go. Actually, Bryce, it's funny you're saying this, because I was checking out some of your videos online, and you're talking about Spotted Cat, and I happened to catch a video where you had a pretty good sing-along going, and you were doing Carole King, You've Got a Friend. And I was like, because I was like, you know, looking to see, well, you know, kind of know you do all kinds of different stuff. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
But you have people singing along, man. That's what they wanted to hear. So you pulled out a Carole King tune.
Exactly. Out of the blue. Yeah. And the whole club is singing. And at the end of the video, so it's like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, right.
And the whole
that
club.
That makes some sense.
Yeah. but the whole, literally the whole club was singing. Just call out my name.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's a great song.
Here's the truth to it. And this is something that's positive about being a musician here. And Bryce is right. You literally are competing with how many doors are open on this street, Frenchman?
Yeah.
And Bryce plays a venue with a cover. I play a venue with a cover. But there's 6 other venues with no cover.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at, you literally have seconds to get someone to come in that door and to stay in the door. And we used to play upstairs at Blue Nile a lot on the weekends. It was a free show. But we knew we had, from the moment somebody walked in from that upstairs door to they walked to the balcony and back, if we didn't have them by that short walk, we lost them. So we had to develop a show that was like at all points. And I mean, it's not a short show. It's a 2.5-3 hour show.
Okay. Know, it's a marathon show.
It's not 45 right. minutes where you can just go hard. So we had to develop a show that would last and impact everybody that walked through the door, and or you don't eat, or you don't eat.
Yeah,
and so it's that part of the city. Well, I think some people are passing a test locally, but I love what Bryce is doing, because he's doing a spin of something that he's trying to push the needle a little bit. I love what he's doing, and that, yeah, there are a lot of musicians who just come in and kind of do a cover band thing, and it's just like, yeah, but I can get that in Memphis, I can get that in this, I can get that in there. It's like New Orleans, we've always been a city where, how does that sound when you play it? Mm-hmm. What's your spin? You couldn't get a gig in this city when we were coming up if you were doing other people's music. You
right.
had to have something original, okay. something different, okay. something spicy, something fresh, and club owners were into that. And I'm not saying they're some of them are still into that, but look, New Orleans is a great place to learn, you know, and it's a great place to cut your teeth. And if you're surviving here and rising to the top here, you'll do well anywhere else, as long as you have your business and you have a forward, you know, thinking kind of process. You'll be fine.
That's a good point, Lou. And I think, and what you, I appreciate what you all are just saying, because I think a lot of people, you know, want to picture it in a way that, you know, you're doing art for art's sake.
Yeah.
And doing art for art's sake doesn't necessarily put food on the table
or keep
a roof over
your head. I got four kids, man.
Right. You got four. Right.
I have never been into this for the sake of art.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just, no. And my dad didn't raise me to be that way. You know, it's like, you know, this industry, we don't have, let me change that. We don't have a business, a music infrastructure in this city, but the tourism, which fuels the cultural economy,
yep.
is a multi-billion dollar industry.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And for any artist to jump in front of a microphone or jump on somebody's stage and say, I'm going to stand up and do this for the sake of art. I love art, and I want people to hear my virtuosity. You know, I want them to hear how much I've been practicing. I'm sorry, I'll call you out. You're a fool.
Yeah.
Because there's billions of dollars flowing through this, you know. And, I mean, I love what I do, but I do it for the sake, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be to be politically correct
hey,
right
man,
now.
You don't want to give too much.
You got to make a living, right?
I mean, we all do.
It's great to be famous after you're dead, which most of you aren't going to even do that. You know what I'm saying? It's with those people.
And let me chime in, too. Bryce and I went through the program at Xavier together. And one of the instructors there in our second year, whether we got along or not or whatever, at least he instilled in us, like, this guy is making mailbox money.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote this song 20 years ago, and he's still getting a check for it.
The first of every month.
Right.
And
he taught us, but he also instilled in us, write, do something, make something. There's more to music. And I think what happens a lot of times is, you know, you're on a stage. It's a high. You get on a stage, adrenaline's pumping. People love you tonight. Mm. as you know, people love you right now. And it's the energy that you get. And I think musicians get caught up in that. And then they get home and they're still broke. They don't have their bills. And it's so important to understand that it is a business. And now more than ever is a business, because now anybody can do music, record music, and release
and
music.
And become a star right quickly.
Right.
One song and you're a star.
Right. You have instant digital.
So true.
Yeah, instant digital distribution. Mm-hmm. You can get it. So I was fortunate. I met that time I left school. I was signed to Milton Batiste record label. Milton Batiste was one of the first people, and this was in the 90s, maybe mid-90s, who just, you walk into his house, he has a studio. Then he's like, hey, come in this room. He has, in the mid-90s, full duplication machines, he's literally making, he just pulled me on the side. It's like, you know, man, I make, you know, minimum $60,000 every summer, and I don't even go on tour. He's like, my musicians go on tour, you know, and I'm selling their albums and I'm doing stuff and we're giving them deals. And I'm just like, wow, this guy. So it showed me at an early age, at a very young age, that, you know, this guy is making money, like doing what he loves. And he's making it in a way that is not necessarily him always being on the stage. So he had the freedom to pick the one gig a week he would do. Mm-hmm. Every week he did one gig, and that's all he had to do. Mm-hmm. And he played what he wanted to play, who he wanted to play with, and that's something I've always been attracted to.
And he paid the bills, huh?
He paid the bills, and I've always said, hey, look, if I just was going to, and I'm not knocking people who do cover bands and corporate band stuff, but for me personally, I would just go back to being a music educator and do that, because I'm a drummer. I'm not trying to beat my body up, you know, that much, you know, for playing a Beyonce song. Beyonce has millions and millions of dollars. I'm not here to promote her. I would like to promote myself.
You be fair. Hold the thoughts. I got to take a little break here. We'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more.
Damn, you got to take a break.
Got to take a break. Talking about paying bills, man.
I got to pay some bills. We get it.
Right. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Dole Drink Show. Come on. C'est le bon temps brûlé. Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. Yeah, from the city that shares a deep connection to bourbon and knows how to throw a party, comes the third annual New Orleans Bourbon Festival from March 20th through the 23rd. Discover over 150 bourbons and American whiskeys, as well as great food at the Grand Tasting. Check out more than 30 seminars led by industry luminaries, special distiller dinners, and much more. The event is brought to you by Beam Suntory, Four Roses, Brown Foreman, Uncle Nearest, Bourbon Plus, and the Hilton Riverside. More info and tickets at nobourbonfest.com. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO in New Orleans, 990 AM, and in podcast land, wherever you may be. And we're here at Louisiana Music Factory as part of our French Quarter Fest series, and we are talking to Dr. Bryce Miller. Dr. Bryce Miller?
I'm here, of
all kinds of things. And Lou and Shalia from Waterseed.
What's happening?
Hello, everybody.
So this segment, y'all, we're going to talk a little bit about drinking food, because we do that on this show. And growing up, let's see, we'll start with you, Bryce, because you grew up here in New Orleans, and we all know this, all three of you know this, that here in New Orleans, we're not separating food from music, from culture, mm-hmm. from drink, from art, from architecture. Mm-hmm. It's all one big tapestry, as
it's
I like
Trinity.
To say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can't pull a thread, because then you lose the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Bryce, when you were growing up around here, or anything, I mean, tell me just your connection to drinking food.
Well, again, I'm the son of a musician. My parents had my house was kind of this party house, you know. One of my earliest memories of food were oysters. So, you know, my parents had like the Saturday night backyard party with a live band, my dad had a band called the Soul Brothers, you know, and there would always be a live band at the backyard party. And, you know, the next morning, my brother and I would have to shuck all the oyster shells, and not shuck them like open them, but like raking them, because the backyard was filled. We had to make these piles with all the oyster shells and put them in buckets and then try and get rid of them for whatever we didn't use for the driveway. Because
you got to use it for the driveway.
The driveway was cool. So, and it's funny that it was Father's Day of, this is 2018, it was Father's Day of 2018 that I had my first oyster, a charboiled oyster.
Father's Day of
2018.
This year. Okay, last year.
I've had a great disliking for oysters because of that experience. I kid you not.
My dad grew up on a chicken farm. I understand exactly what you're talking about, because he hated chicken forever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. And you know, my dad is actually was like the primary cook of the family. You know, my mom would cook like dinner, but my dad would like cook like food. You know, my dad would jump in the kitchen and like five skillets and just, you know, I didn't even know what Chinese rice was. My dad had been making chicken and shrimp rice since I was a kid, you know. And my grandmother, you know, old Creole lady, you know, she was the cook of the family, you know, to this day, whether it was gumbo or farina. Many people don't know about that farina.
I know about farina.
Government food. But man, my grandma could lay down that farina, boy.
Oh, what is farina?
You don't know about farina?
You don't know farina?
No.
That's when you can't afford oatmeal.
Exactly, yeah. It was some government food. It was like,
okay.
Look it up.
It was
all
like
right,
smooth
farina.
Grits with sugar.
Right, look it up. It tastes like nothing you've ever could imagine.
But until my grandma, I kid you not, until a month before my grandmother passed away, she fixed me farina. Whenever I came to her house, she fixed me farina. I've grown up that same way. You know, I'm my wife is the cook of the house, but I'm the chef.
Okay.
I will barbecue, and you know, I fix my four layer lasagna, you know, things of that. When it comes to drinking, let me see. I actually had my because of, again, my father, growing up the musicians, man, I started driving when I was 14 years old because my dad would be so drunk that I would have to drive home. Today is his birthday, too. Happy birthday. So he's going to be pissed off when he hears this. But it's the truth. Happy birthday. Talk about it. You know what I'm saying? But because I was around these musicians who would just get wasted, man, wasted. I promise, I vowed that I would never drink. You know, and I was pretty good. Like, as a teenager, I never, they called me Square. Like, one of my nicknames was Square. Bryce don't drink. Bryce don't smoke. Bryce don't smoke. You know what I'm saying? He's like the good guy. You know, but it's because, man, I was around these cats. It's like, you know, I didn't want all of that. But I had my first beer in, was San Sebastian, Spain.
Heineken.
Overseas.
Heineken sponsored the jazz festival that we were, they were one of the sponsors of the jazz festival. I was there with Pinstripe Brass Band. And
when was this roughly, bro?
This was probably, this was like 94.
Okay.
93. I graduated from high school in 92. So it was somewhere in that range. And I had my very first beer with my dad.
Wow.
And it was a Heineken. Into today, my number one beer. Anyone who knows me knows if you buy me a beer, you're buying Bryce a Heineken.
Well, we got you a beer, man. You didn't tell me that. Yeah, well, you ended up with an Abita.
Because I mean, it's in New Orleans. You know, I mean, it was in New Orleans Music Factory. I didn't want to, you know. But I also make some mean ass drinks. If you want to, you know, we have this thing called fire water. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. So I'm a mixologist. Many people don't know that, except for my musicians or people that come to the house.
Watch out!
I'm a mixologist.
Okay. All right,
I'm gonna take you up on that.
Oh, hey, I'll knock you out, man. Okay, right. You think you're drinking ghetto Kool-Aid the whole day?
Just hit you all of a sudden.
Whoa!
You wake up 2 days later, like, damn,
some good Kool-Aid
right in the back of the head. What about you, Lou and Shalia? I mean, I'm gonna ask you go, Lou, and then Shalia. I'm gonna ask you what your take is since you moved from Houston.
I can't wait to give you my take.
So my experience was similar to Bryce's. Grew up, grandmama, she was a...
we're good boys. We're suburban kids.
Well, yeah, kind of. St. Bernard, North Villeria. But it's still pretty good. You know, I'll put it this way. And this is where I think we have a lot in common. You know, my parents made sure I went to good schools all the time. So, but look, my grandmother's oyster dressing was crazy. Gumbo, her gumbo, anything she made was ridiculous. And ironically enough, she was the first person she used to drink. What they call it? The Miller little one shot?
The ponies.
The ponies.
Oh, ponies. What, yeah.
It's like, Lou, walk down to the store and back
my
then.
My aunt
I could
still
go,
drinks those to this day.
Yeah. I could go and get it for her. She walked down the store and get me. I said, walk down the store and get it to her. And her tradition was, you know, pop the cap off it. It's like, you take the first
that
sip.
That was my first beer, too,
and
my mom.
So, yeah, so I was, you know, my mom would be mad, but I was like 6, 7, hey, take the first shot of beer. It's like, that's enough. That's it. But ironically enough, being around musicians and at a very young age playing music and seeing, to be honest, what would happen to other musicians who, I mean, you got everything for free. You got your alcohol, your drugs, everything was for free if you were popular. So I say, you know what? I never indulged. Mm-hmm. I may drink maybe once, twice a year, literally. You know,
even now.
So, as Bryce takes it, take another hit.
He was like, not me.
Pull his beer up.
It's amazing,
so,
Luke.
But look, being from New Orleans, people say, man, stop lying. There's no way you live in New Orleans. And you don't, man, look. But honestly, I never started. I think my mom fooled me. I was in maybe a junior in high school, sophomore. Wine coolers were popular. It was Christmas. I want a wine cooler. She bought me a bunch of wine cooler. I drank it. Underage again. But what it did was it made it, I was like, this is not really exciting.
That sugar water.
Give me
that's
some
a hangover.
Give me some fruit juice or something, and that was better for me. So it's like from that, it's just not my thing. So the food, grandmother, and I guess the drinking too was my grandmother's thing. So, right, so that's it, you know. But that's my experience. So Shalia,
so I can still speak on the reach of New Orleans culture into other places. So Lou and Bryce both spoke about their grandmothers. My grandmothers on both sides made gumbo. So that shows the, you know.
But was it filet gumbo? So you can't drink gumbo up in here. That's his filet gumbo.
I don't know if it was filet gumbo, but I grew up.
You're supposed to know.
I grew up eating gumbo.
Did it have tomatoes in it?
I mean, there was some tomato.
Don't answer any of these questions.
The roux was good. I know the roux is important. But yeah, so I did grow up eating gumbo, and I visited New Orleans as a young girl just like at least once a year at some point. And then there's just a lot of influence on the Houston culture. So as far as food, I was able to eat jambalaya and gumbo. Those are traditionally New Orleans foods that I remember growing up eating.
Yeah, and now coming here, what do you think, though? Were you getting it right out there, or are you not getting it right out there?
Well, things have changed because now I'm vegan, so I don't really eat some of those same foods. But I will say there are some places in the city that sell vegan gumbo.
Okay.
Yes.
That's new. It's like being a jazz musician saying I'm celibate.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't call my thing vegan right now, but I have given up everything except seafood.
Why?
Man, look, man, the road is this tough thing. So, but it has made it in New Orleans. It has made it. I'm not going to say challenging, but I've actually been able to experience different types of flavors that I wouldn't traditionally would have experienced. So, you know, kind of gave up red meat a long time ago, decided to do the chicken thing, gave up fast food a very long time ago. And
I did give up fast food.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And you know, to answer Bryce, it was, you know, to be honest, it was, we're on the road a lot and my body was physically hurting me, you know, I mean, and not this last tour, but the tour last year, the whole tour, I had a massive amount of pain in my right arm. It's like I couldn't feel my thumb, you know, and I still had to play all these shows. Mm-hmm. And so I gave it up for Lent. I gave up all this stuff for Lent. And it's the inflammation from the meat and everything. It went away. So now I'm just like, you know, 10, 15 years younger. Whereas as a drummer, I'm not having any issues. So I'm not saying it's for everybody. I don't even know if I'm going to do it forever. But this phase that I'm in right now, I've been healthier, at least physically, with the physical demands of touring and playing music. It's eliminated that for me. So.
And that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Thank you for speaking on that, Luke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do think there is an ebb and flow, like, when it comes to food. Because, like, you know, New Orleans food is so rich, and it's just, like, this abundance of it, you know. Like, my family, all my aunts, and, you know, I mean, my wife. Man, my wife, if you see her, you'd never think, because she's just a little petite Jamaican woman, but man, she lays it down in the kitchen. Man. Yeah. I mean, we eat. If you follow me on Facebook, like I have this hashtag called "Eat Like a Fat Kid," because if you see me traveling and stuff, I try everything, you know, like eat, but I still have like this health consciousness of it,
right?
And like with me, like so, like Lou travels way more than I do. I travel more sporadically because again, I have kids. But I like every few months go on this health kick, you know, where I hit the gym. So now I'm at the gym 5 days a week. And, you know, it's like, you know, I stopped drinking beer. Like beer is kind of new. Beer's been like maybe 3 months back in my life because beer has this estrogen thing that gives us this belly. And I'm real self-conscious about this belly. Mm-hmm. But as a performer, I'm a hype man. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm a jazz musician, you'd think I'm a hip hop performer. The way that I hype for my band. So I'm like dancing with people and I'm jumping up and down on the stage. So and so and so. And man, you start feeling it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I got a 3-hour show, a 4-hour show ahead of me, just like them. You know what I'm saying? Right. It's like, I can't be saying, look, just drop it like it's hot, get low with it, everybody jump, so and so and so, and then I'm in the back.
Right. Well, right. And then you got
to
play your horn.
So you have to take care of yourself. You do. It's so important.
Yeah, and you know, too, that it's like one of these things where, okay, if you really got to do it at the time, you can do it at the time, but the bounce back,
right,
that takes so much longer.
Trying to do a 4-hour show where you're constantly jumping and hyping. Because, again, I'm a jazz trumpet player, but if you see our show, Luke can attest to it. Mm-hmm. It's a jazz show you ain't never seen before. You don't know if you had a jazz show or if you had a Kendrick Lamar show. You're trying to figure out, you know, what is this? You know, but you need the energy for it. You know what I'm saying?
And you got to do it again the next day or the day after.
Yeah. So my health consciousness for that is I'll drink tequila. They say tequila is healthier.
On that note, we're going to take a little break here.
I've never heard that.
With that little pearlism, we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drake Show. Friends, come on back.
Hey friends, Brian Diaz here with the NOAA Drink Show. Agave Week is back with its new headquarters at the Ace Hotel in downtown New Orleans. Week-long events kick off Sunday, March 10th with tequila and mezcal tastings, seminars, panel discussions, and one-of-a-kind parties. Visit NOLAAgaveWeek.com for tickets and info. The Grand Tasting is the third annual Top Taco with unlimited gourmet tacos and cocktails from some of the best restaurants in the city. It's happening at Waldenburg Park Thursday, March 14th from 7 to 10 p.m. For tickets and info, visit TopTacoNOLA.com. Laissez les bon temps brûler. Brian Diaz here with the NOAA Drink Show. Yeah, from the city that shares a deep connection to bourbon and knows how to throw a party, comes the third annual New Orleans Bourbon Festival from March 20th through the 23rd. Discover over 150 bourbons and American whiskeys, as well as great food at the Grand Tasting. Check out more than 30 seminars led by industry luminaries, special distiller dinners, and much more. The event is brought to you by Beam Suntory, Four Roses, Brown Foreman, Uncle Nearest, Bourbon Plus, and the Hilton Riverside. More info and tickets at nobourbonfest.com.
My mama said, boy, what's going on? It's like the bird that I raised won't fly, cause you're on the ground, She said, now son, and no life gets you down, But heavy is the head of a man, the man who wears a crown.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yeah, it's our French Quarter Fest series, second installment thereof, right here at Louisiana Music Factory, 421 Frenchman Street in New Orleans. Yeah, and we're chatting here with Dr. Bryce Miller, as well as Lou and Shalia from Waterseed. Thanks, all three.
Hey,
for
what's happening.
And it's funny, you know, because we're putting these things together, right? And I kind of, the whole principle of this is we want to get, you know, people from, you know, a couple different artists, a couple different bands, different, you know, sets of performers. And, you know, I was thinking, I didn't know if y'all knew each other.
Yeah.
And y'all went to school together.
Yeah, we did.
Lou and Bryce did. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah.
It's New Orleans, right? I mean, it's really not. I think I'm probably never going to have it happen where I'm going to have two people on or three people on and they're not going to know each other.
It's a little big town.
I've never figured out how people have affairs in New Orleans.
I don't know either.
I've really been trying to figure that out.
Everybody's keeping a secret,
I guess.
Everybody knows somebody. Yeah, everybody knows somebody.
New Orleans is a very down-home place.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody's 1 degree of separation in this town.
Because
you'll sit there and you sit next to somebody at a bar, at a restaurant, wherever, and you start talking to them, and you'll say, oh, you know, so-and-so, so-and-so. And you go, amazing. And you go, eh, it's really not that amazing that you know so-and-so and so-and-so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we got the 36th annual French Quarter Festival here coming up April 10th through the 14th. Mm-hmm. And a great music festival. And
right in the middle of my birthday.
Well, mm-hmm. Right in the middle of your birthday. All right.
April 13th. Yeah, April 13th. Yeah. Everybody bring me a cake.
You playing on your birthday?
Nice.
I don't know. I haven't looked at the schedule yet.
Really, okay. Really, the festival is his birthday.
It's about my birthday.
It is his birthday party.
You know, if you look at the history of Twisted Dixie, E. Sir Mueller's Twisted Dixie was one of my groups. You know, it was, you know, Twisted, E. Sir Mueller actually created festivals in America, and he created the French Quarter Festival to celebrate my birthday.
There you go.
So what people don't recognize that when they're coming to New Orleans, they're actually coming to celebrate my birthday.
So that whole thing about the construction and new sidewalks in the French Quarter and Montreal, that's all BS.
It's
your birthday.
It's all political.
It's all about
we need sponsorship money, but it's really at the end of the day, it's about my birthday.
Right, right.
Yeah, so be sure to bring some cakes and some Heineken.
That's right.
And some gumbo.
And some gumbo. There you go. It's a French Quarter Fest brought to you by Chevron and Dr. Bryce Miller's birthday.
There you go.
And Farina, if you
apparently
got Farina.
The good stuff.
Well, so aside from it being your birthday celebration, Bryce, what does it mean to actually play French Quarter Festival you personally?
I love French Quarter Festival. And I love French Quarter Festival because it focuses on the local artists. It gives the local artists an opportunity to showcase themselves in front of an audience. And for French Quarter Fest, I mean, over these 36 years, it's grown into an international festival. I mean, there are folk who travel from throughout the world that come to New Orleans for this event. And it's a great platform. You know, I was thinking about this when, you know, when it was like I got the call for this. And I'm thinking that I know I began playing French Quarter Festival with my group, Mahogany Brass Band. We were right out of high school from St. Aug, and we were playing at Donna's Bar and Grill because Donna's Bar and Grill used to sponsor the brass bands.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was down on the river is where the brass band stage was. Yeah, it's kind of where the Natchez Landing is, somewhere in that area. And it was like this, I think about it, I mean, really young, man. I mean, like 19, 20, 21, somewhere in that range, you know. But to have this festival and suddenly to have, you know, 500 people in the audience, mm-hmm. I mean, that says a less big for us, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I love French Quarter Fest because of that. It's like this focus on local music. It's an opportunity for artists who may not have the platform that some other artists may have, or whether it's agents or record labels, et cetera, to get out and do their thing and do the best that they can do and reach a new audience. You have, you know, festival producers from around the world who are there, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But it's also that opportunity to invite your family and your friends because it's free.
Because it's free.
Yeah.
You know, it's free. And it's that event where, like, your peers, we talked about mm-hmm. peers earlier, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the three of us can probably agree because we're of the same generation mm-hmm. that – well, and probably me a little bit different from Lou and them because, you know, Lou and them doing this future funk thing. So mm-hmm. that's something that is more attractive to our peers. Whereas mm-hmm. me, I'm still more in this jazz idiom. Mm-hmm. And it's hard trying to ask your peers mm-hmm. who don't give a damn about jazz to come and see you. But at least French Quarter Fest becomes an excuse because it's free.
Yep, right. You can wander over for a half an hour and check it out.
And they can wave at you and, like, listen to one solo and then disappear, right. But then send you a text like, I supported you.
I saw right. you, man. You know? It was a great set. Yeah. What'd you close with? I don't know.
Yeah. there's so much diversity.
Yeah.
You know,
the festival has grown so quickly and so much since it started, you know.
Yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
The guys over there are always good to us and support us. And, yeah, there's a massive amount of diversity. You know, it's a great festival. I don't know what the record is, but it's the largest something now. I forget what it is.
It's the largest free music festival in the country, although it sometimes alternates with Simply Hardly Bluegrass and Golden Gate Park in San Francisco.
No, gotcha.
It's about the same number of people, but, like, you know,
gotcha.
Yeah. Each year.
Well, yeah. Our experience there has been great.
How many years have you all played there?
This is our third year
this
playing.
This is your third year?
Third year. Yeah.
Cool. So where are y'all playing? Do you know what stage you're playing?
Is it the Grand Isle stage, which is kind of like the gazebo right off of Waldenburg.
Yeah, right on the pavilion, the metal pavilion.
Yeah, we'll be
used to be the Louie stage.
That's right.
Mm. That's what I want to call it. But
we'll be closing it out, and I don't know the date off the top, but we'll be closing it out. I think it's on that Saturday.
Okay, cool.
So it's pretty cool.
Right.
Awesome.
Bryce, do you know where you're playing?
We're on the Jack Daniel stage, and this is with East Bermuda's Twisted Dixie.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And for Twisted Dixie, this is our... I think this is our third year with Twisted Dixie. Mm-hmm. And then we have Mahogany Brass Band. Mahogany did the parade, I think, a year ago or 2 years ago, mm-hmm. something like that.
The kickoff parade.
Yeah, the kickoff parade.
In Square, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I've done, you know, French Quarter Fest with my groups, Mahogany Brass Band, recently Twisted Dixie. I've done it with Treme Brass Band multiple times, Pinstripe Brass Band, and just a good contingency. I think I've played pretty much around the festival, everything from the parade to the stage. I play every year also with Delphi Marcellus and the Uptown Jazz Orchestra.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm a member of that band and we played down at Jackson Square with that. And that's a hoot also. I mean, to go from brass band to Zydeco to bluegrass to brass band to futuristic funk, and like all of this just within walking distance.
Yeah.
You can't get it anywhere else, man. I mean, it's...
Y'all do, yeah, absolutely. You guys are going to stick around for another Child Noel Drinks podcast.
Let me post
tell
people
here.
Real quick, website?
We're getting the
website, waterseedmusic.com.
Facebook,
check us out.
And the gram.
Yes.
That's right, Waterseed. Just Google Waterseed. You'll find
everywhere.
And for me, there's the New Orleans Music Company, www.thenomc.com, and then there's also East Bermuda's Twisted Dixie, www.twisteddixienola.com, or just Google I am Bryce Miller. My tag everywhere is I am Bryce Miller.
I'll
link you everywhere else. If you want to get married, I have that certificate, so I can get you married also. I can
hook
you up.
Friends, we're going to close out the radio portion of the show here, so remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until then, cheers, y'all. We'll be right back.
like this. I said, I call your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. And he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try to bend your ear. It don't matter who you're serving, we're all the same down here.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for sticking around for another Shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you as always. Thanks for listening in, friends, this week. Hope you're enjoying the second installment of our French Quarter Fest series. They are from Louisiana Music Factory, chatting with Lou and Shalia from Waterseed and Dr. Bryce Miller. Really fun conversation. Enjoyed chatting with them. We're going to send it right back over with a bit more of an interview with those guys. And we're going to have some more, of course, of our French Quarter Fest series coming up soon. As a matter of fact, we're going to be taping another round here this weekend on February 9th at Louisiana Music Factory. More info on that on our Facebook page coming soon. So we'll have that interview or that set of interviews out for you in the coming weeks. As I said, we're going to send it right back to Louisiana Music Factory to continue this conversation, and then I'll be back with my parting shot. Here we go. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Another Shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you as always. We're here at Louisiana Music Factory, part of our French Quarter Fest series, installment number 2. French Quarter Fest, of course, is coming up April 10th through the 14th. Pleased to be joined by my guests, Dr. Bryce Miller, as well as Lou and Shalia from Waterseed. Thanks, y'all, for being here.
Hello, good evening.
Thank you for having us. Absolutely. Hello, podcast world.
There, your podcast world. Here
That's
we
right.
are. Yeah, so, you know, it's always a lot of fun to have folks on, and one of the things that I always enjoy, conversations like this. And I feel bad for the listeners sometimes because the stuff that we're talking about between the segments
is what they're missing.
Right. Is what they're missing. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Like, and I'll share one another nugget of wisdom because Bryce, you were saying, you know, tequila's healthy for me. That's one of my takeaways. And have you ever seen a baby pigeon? Was one that you just
the question
up with.
of the century? Have you ever seen a baby pigeon?
I put it out to you, listeners. I
mean, the things we need to know. The things we need to know.
These are things that we need to know.
Send the show a picture of a baby pigeon. Yeah. That's what you need to do.
There you go.
We want to know.
There you go. Tag Dr. Bryce Miller. I am Bryce Miller. Tag Waterseed. Mm-hmm. Tag Nola Drinks.
That's right.
With a picture of a baby pigeon.
We've been talking about the lunar landing conspiracy way too long.
Yeah.
What's more important is who in the hell has seen a baby pigeon.
I like
that's right.
This.
Forget flat Earth. Forget all that. We're talking, about the baby pigeon.
Yeah. Is there a song in there, you guys?
Maybe
they,
so.
They could be. Mm-hmm.
The baby pigeon.
There's also been a reduction of pigeons in New Orleans since Katrina, too.
You know, well, there you go.
Is that a good thing?
No. Mm. I mean,
it made the neighborhood.
Really?
Kid, you ran from pigeons. Mm. You couldn't play street football because they dropped poop on you. You know what I'm saying?
But, you know, there's something about pigeons. A lot of people don't like pigeons.
But they want their territorial.
Yeah,
they're like
they could be
the outcasts. Yeah,
they're very territorial.
I would take the pigeons over. What I have noticed since Katrina, a lot of exotic birds are now in the city. It's like, what are you doing? Like, there's a hawk that lives in my neighborhood.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, what are you doing here?
Well, give me a pigeon more than a possum.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, taking care of the pigeons is what the hawk's doing.
Well,
he's culling that pigeon population.
You're right, but he needs to take care of the possums.
Give me a pigeon more than a possum.
I'll take a pigeon over a possum. Possums are mean things.
We can't keep our back deck door open. Screen open,
right?
Because the damn possums.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah,
I have the same issue.
It's rough.
They're mean animals.
They're ugly,
and they got them teeth. And,
but let's talk about food because, let's get away from possums. Then that might.
Well, actually, we could go into food.
Yeah,
in certain parts
my wife's
of the
Michelle
state.
Met.
Yeah, okay.
You know, her grandmother used to cook possums, so let's get away from all.
That's
that.
Right.
People eat pigeons in certain parts of the world too, but we're going to move away from that as well. Hey, something that we're kind of touching on and starting to get into, and we're talking about this more during the break too. You know, you all grew up around music, had people I think take you under their wing, teach you some stuff, and we were talking about how that's so important. The community of music in New Orleans is a big deal. Passing on that tradition is a big deal,
right?
But it's a tough thing now, isn't it, Bryce?
Right.
You were saying some stuff. Either and anybody jumping
I mean,
on that, but
I mean I can attest to it again. You know, you have options in life, And again, like going back to school, you know,
yep.
You know, Luke mentioned that he stepped out of Xavier for a minute and hit the road to like do the music thing. And I made some serious sacrifices by like staying in school. Mm-hmm. To get that degree. And then once getting that degree, I made some serious sacrifices of like becoming an educator, becoming a band director, right? Right. And during the time that I was a band director, I never forget I was a band director at Reed High School from 97 to 2000. Man, my gigs probably disappeared like 80% because of the time dedication to be a band director, mm-hmm. you know? But with that, in recent years, especially post-Katrina, essentially music and cultural arts education has disappeared from our schools. And we don't realize, you know, we like, you know, the city and certain folk like to hone on like Trombone Shorty and, you know, Kermit Ruffins and all these names of popularity, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't know where Lou and I fall into that at this point. Yeah, maybe we haven't rubbed elbows the right people or whatever. That's not going to that. That's a Bryce Miller. Yeah. Just leave it there. But you know, but you look at all of these individuals, they all got their foundation in somebody's classroom, somebody's music ed classroom,
yeah.
you know? And that doesn't happen anymore. And it has, unfortunately, a detrimental effect on what we see culturally in New Orleans right now, what we see musically, and what we hear musically, mm-hmm. you know. But I've been so dedicated to that, I've actually, in 2017, I think, I started a group called Arts NOLA, which is a nonprofit dedicated to cultural arts education, for the simple reason because the schools aren't doing it anymore. Mm-hmm. The school district isn't doing it anymore. I was actually Jazz Studies Coordinator for New Orleans Public Schools before Hurricane Katrina. Mm,
okay.
So I provided all the cultural and arts education for the whole city, 120 public schools, mm-hmm. and then became Director of Humanities for New Orleans Public Schools after Katrina, which means I put back online many of the music and art programs in the city.
Okay.
But then after that, in 2007, I went to the University of Alabama and, you know, changed the whole trajectory of my academic profession, mm-hmm. or my academic career, I should say. But to this day, man, we don't have the breadth of cultural education that we need in this city. We take it for granted, mm-hmm. you know. And I travel a good amount, and I have kids, and we travel. You know, recently we were in like, not Cancun, one of these Mexican places. But essentially, it's like you think of like your Cancuns and your Progresos. These are tourist destinations, mm-hmm. and all they have is tourism.
Right.
And what we've done in New Orleans is we've put this focus where we're just a tourism town, and we're not focused on anything else except the tourism dollars. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
so that you're saying it kind of corrupts her.
Yeah, because everything's free.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, damn, trying to create the next Louis Armstrong. Oh, it'll just naturally happen on its own.
It's interesting that you say this, and I'm going to get your perspective on this, you two, Shalia, mm-hmm. and Lou, because we've had a lot of conversations on the show where people, you know, good stories, where people show up, they're a kid, maybe even somebody who's moved from out of town, and somebody who's a musician takes them under their wing, you know, learn the hard way, some mm-hmm. tough love, right? If you get right. up on stage, you better know your chops. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right. a friend of mine, you know, came up that way playing under Eddie Bo, for example, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. brought him in off the street, started putting him playing guitar with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, good stuff like that. But that component of losing the education component in the schools, that's that generational thing that you were talking about, I think, and I don't want to put words in your mouth,
yeah.
but the brass band consideration being generational. The band leaders and the school band programs being a generational consideration too, right?
Well, so yeah, it's a massive problem here in the city. And I kind of feel like, well, I'm not going to get too political, but you know, right now, you know, the job, well, I don't know when this airs, maybe not, but in the real time where we are right now, the unemployment is an all time low. And that's waves and rides of the previous guy that was in charge of that, you know. And in New Orleans, we're kind of in that space. We're in that space where if we don't do something quickly, we will lose the new kids, that come in that we need. So you don't have bands or you have, you know, when I first actually moved back to New Orleans after Katrina, I taught at a middle school.
Tell the nightmare story.
I'm not going to say the name of the school, but I'm going to say that as an educator, I want to compete with the other bands, and they just refuse. We just want a drum section. Now look, I'm a drummer. Why wouldn't I just want a drum section? Like, no, we have instruments. I want a band. And I fought them on it. And they never supported it. And I ended up not staying the whole year. But the idea is that we've lost so much. We've lost our neighborhoods. You mm-hmm. have to realize that we become Las Vegas if we do not get our neighborhoods back. Mm-hmm. We become Memphis, Tennessee. And I'm not saying these places are bad. I'm just saying those things. Why come to New Orleans when I can hear a cover band
exactly.
play, you know, Aretha anywhere in the world? Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. but in New Orleans, you get something different. And so what's happened is where we would have our own little tribes and communities. I grew up in this neighborhood. I went, like, the main question that people still ask in a city, what high school did you go to? Mm-hmm. If you tell them your high school, 90% of the time they can figure out at least 40 to 60% of what you may be about.
Mm-hmm.
Because exactly. those were your tribes. Mm-hmm. Those were your tribes. You grew up in, they tell you what neighborhood you grew up in, what people you may knew. Oh, you went to that high school? Well, I know your mom or your daddy. Tell me about your family. Then they can figure out who you are mm-hmm. in your lineage and say, oh, you so-and-so's boy. I know you're a good kid. You know what I'm saying? Because I know your parents. So all of these things, but we've lost our neighborhoods, and then that rolls into the schools.
Because we don't have neighborhood schools anymore.
Exactly. I mean, and when I was out of the city and other cities, I'd say, look, man, being a drum major is bigger than being the star quarterback in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, wow, how does that happen? It's like, because it's like marching band was a contact sport. And look, I went to another high school. I didn't go to St. Aug. Like,
yeah,
right.
Just
I don't
did.
Talk I don't talk about the high school
won't talk
often.
About it, but you know.
But I will say that the drum teacher over there was excellent, but that was probably the best experience mm-hmm. of it. But I will say that you know, I'm marching and I got to march next to his school, St. Aug. They're going under the bridge blowing and I'm mad because all of my friends went to his school. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, and I'm going under the bridge and I'm just like, mm-hmm. all right, it's cool. but it was a sense of pride. Like,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
hey, this is now we were the best in our core style. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. We were the best in the state in our core style. But they were the best in the traditional style in a way that, as Bryce has been talking about, that resonated with people that
your
were your
neighborhood,
friends, right? That were your friends.
There wasn't no core drumming going on in the hood.
It
was just playing
right.
paradillas,
right?
They you know, but I, in, you know, you like asked earlier, like, how did I get into this music thing? And the what attracted me, not only my dad, you know, and being around it, but again. Just as young people, being in the band, mm-hmm. you were a rock star. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you were a rock star within your school.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I tell folk all the time, like in New Orleans, if you were not good enough to make the band, you play sports.
Right.
That's the way it worked. But you think about all the exposure that you received as a band member.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have Mardi Gras, you have parades, you have conventions, so and so.
Yep.
Whereas if you're a football player, you have what? 12 games and that's it. That's
yeah.
a wrap.
Yeah,
it's done.
You're done. Mm-hmm. Whereas band, you're year round. Plus, you had those 12 games with the football players.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm. and
but again, just going back mm-hmm. to the importance of like cultural education. You know, and we know the statistics. We don't need to go into it, but we know that you know, for the young people who study music, they read better.
Absolutely.
They're better at math. Better critical thinkers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was just having a conversation last week with another educator. The fact of like, she was asking me like, how did music really? How do I honestly feel that music affected me? Because I tell people, you know, I don't want to say I'm a nerd, but I'm a nerd. I'm a geek. I'm a smart student. I was a straight A student. You know, I'd whip your ass in a heartbeat. I was a fighter, which was my problem in junior high and high school. I have an older brother
okay.
who was more of a football player.
Okay.
You know, so I'm a fighter, but I was a straight A student. But the thing is, like, as a musician,
mm-hmm.
because in music, you're reading two or three measures ahead of what you're actually playing. So it gives you like this, you know, this, you know, what's the proper term? But you have like these brief moments of memorization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Short-term memory.
Your short-term memory right, because yeah. you're looking at measure 32, but you're actually reading measure 36
mm-hmm.
because
right.
the music doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
So as a student, you're reading the sentence. Yeah, you know I mean, you're reading ahead of what you're, you know what I'm saying?
Right. It takes a certain mental processing to mm-hmm. be able to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, but at the same time, we look at right now, there's this focus on like standardized tests. But you mm-hmm. took out the number one tool to help kids do better on standardized tests, which is the arts.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
They didn't realize that.
Yeah.
It's got the number one thing.
No, I mean, we're talking about the aspects of critical thinking, which is incredibly important, right? And I think we're also talking about, too, the idea of playing in an ensemble. I mean, it is, it's a, there's a teamwork consideration.
Discipline.
Certainly. And that teaches you things as well.
Yeah. Patience, absolutely.
Patience.
Social skills, coexistence, patience. Mm-hmm. Like you said.
Mm-hmm. The discipline that it takes to do something. And I always say this. Look, no one picks up an instrument and it's amazing. You're going to be bad for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. you're going to have to pick it back up and say, okay, I got beat up today. And look, you know, you had Stephanie Jordan on before. I was playing at Jazzland with them. Look, you know, these weren't hostile. These weren't polite situations. This, mm-hmm. I was a kid, and they're going to come at you like adults. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, do it or not. You know, some of our instructors at Xavier would say, man, if you have a complaint, don't say it. Shut up. Say nothing in my class. If you can't play what you need to play, you don't need to talk mm-hmm. to me. Don't. And it's like either you did it, either you really wanted to do it or you didn't. But at that point in time, they're going to flush out the people who didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So that level of discipline to stay in those programs and to go through, I'm not going to say abuse, because these people showed us a lot of love too. But they were very honest about
mental,
where.
I mean, it's a mental strategy.
Right. To get you to be a better musician. They'd say, you know, they would really go in on you. Mm-hmm. But you would go home, you would work 10 times harder, and you come back. And then when you come up a little bit, they go, okay, cool. But then once you reached a certain point, they would give you everything, mm-hmm. all the information, all the connections, everything. They'd take you on shows, be like, I'm going to introduce you, start paying you, start doing all these things. Mm-hmm. So it grew. But we have lost that in the city. As you mentioned earlier, we have lost kind of like the giving back. I know I've done my share of attempting to do it. Bryce has, Waterseed as a whole has. We try to help out groups that are younger than us, right. Whether or not they listen or not is a whole different thing. But even the guys inside of our band, you know, had a long conversation with him on Monday. Like, this industry and what you're in is way more complicated than you could possibly ever imagine, mm-hmm. especially now. And in having a conversation with someone you mentored, I won't bring his name mm-hmm. up, but he called me mm-hmm. and he was and I just told him, you know, you're a great player, man. You're a great player. You have no relationships in this city. And it's like, if you have no relationships, you're just going to be a great player.
That's
like
how the city works.
You have to build relationships. And I've been telling them this for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I don't see your relationships yet. You keep asking me how we're doing what we're doing. Because I actually know people, and you know, we help each other. We give and take on what we're doing, and they know that I try to be a stand-up guy with whatever I do, and they know what they can rely on. But you need the really, because they're great players all over the city. Mm-hmm. What's going to make you different? You know, the relationship. So,
but you know that goes back to like the tutelage of and the importance of the generational mentorship, mm-hmm. because in our heads, we're the greatest at everything we think we do. Mm-hmm. But what humbles you is when you're around other folk, especially your elders, mm-hmm. you know. So, again, like, you know, for me, like, coming through the ranks of, like, Pinstripe Brass Band, you know, my trumpet teacher was George Johnson, who was the principal trumpet player for Pinstripe Brass Band, who actually, like, was one of the people who taught Terrence Blanchard.
Yeah.
I mean, George Johnson was one of the baddest trumpet players in this city. You know, God rest his soul. He passed away after Hurricane Katrina. But I learned so much from him. So what that did was that humbled me. That taught me humbleness. Because, yeah, as a little 15-year-old, I am hot-headed. Mm-hmm. I think I know it because I learned this little solo. Mm-hmm. So and so and so. Mm-hmm. But then when I hear him start playing all this Freddie Hubbard, you know, I'm like, damn.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Right. But sadly, we don't have that anymore. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you have these young folk who they don't understand the history. They don't understand the culture, and because they learn a little something, or they can learn two solos, et cetera, they think that they're like highballing, and it becomes detriment to everyone. But the other thing that you learn, like Lou was just saying, is that not only humbleness, but the elders also taught you the business.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They taught you how to carry yourself. Again, with me going back to Pinstripe, I had to wear black and white. Shine shoes, black mm-hmm. starch pants, black right. belt, white starch shirt, mm-hmm. black tie. White and black traditional band hat. Mm-hmm. Now, ask me what happened if I had a brown belt on.
Yeah, you got sent home, right?
I got docked. Benefit. It would be called a benefit. You're doing a benefit today.
Yeah. And I got docked.
And it took me a minute to figure out, what do you mean a benefit?
They told me wear black socks, and I have on black and white socks. You know what?
Okay.
You're doing a benefit. You got. But you had two choices. You can stump home and cry, or you can say, you know what? he said black socks. He really did say black socks. Mm-hmm. So next time, I'm going to wear black socks.
It's not going to happen again.
Right? It taught you the process. Mm-hmm. You know, it taught you how to carry yourself. It taught you how to conduct yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It taught
standard.
You standards. Of, yes, taught you standard of responsibility, mm-hmm. et cetera. And, you know, I'm like, you wouldn't imagine how many texts and inboxes and direct messages I get on a daily basis from musicians. Oh, man, I got one late last night, 12:30. Man, I'm trying to get some corporate gigs. Tell me what I need to do so and so and so because you do all the corporate gigs. But first, I'm not going to just tell you what you need to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But the processes to help cats understand that no longer exist.
Right. Hmm.
You know?
Shalia, let me ask you this question.
Absolutely.
Coming from Houston and then coming into this world and coming to this world at a professional level, was it pretty eye-opening for you? Was it pretty different from what you were expecting?
Well, I have to say I didn't come directly from Houston to New Orleans. I came to New Orleans by way of Atlanta.
Okay.
So I would say I started to learn more about the business while in Atlanta.
Okay.
So that's where I, you know, got my feet wet and immersed in that culture. And the culture, the music culture specifically in Atlanta, is very different from what you have here in New Orleans. And just to go back to what you all were saying about marching bands, I can definitely relate to what you're saying because I was in the marching band in my high school. I was actually a major at Twirler. And
I was going to ask you to play flute.
Actually, that's my bandmate, Sinise. She's a flautist.
The flute. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Singer.
Okay. Yep. So, marching band is huge in Houston. As much as it was important in New Orleans and still is, it was very, very important. I remember band camp and everything like that. We had to do the same thing that all the other instrumentalists in the band had to do. But it made us really tight. As a matter of fact, my high school marched in a Mardi Gras parade here in New Orleans. So that's we had a really good band. So I can relate. It did teach certain standards. My band teacher back then, like, he was not having it. Like, don't even play. So it definitely taught you humility and how to present yourself a certain way. Shout out to Dr. Marion Ross, my band director.
Like, go Marion Ross, go Marion Ross, go Marion
Ross. Yeah, but as far as the business, it's been interesting. I have to say, as well as we were doing in Atlanta, we certainly had our struggles also. Just, you know, learning the business, figuring out how to navigate, be authentic with what we want to present, but also be what the venues are looking for. And sometimes you kind of toe the line. It's important to, like, really be who you are, but sometimes it might be tempting to, you know, maybe take more cover band shows because you want the money. But I have to say, we really stay true to our vision and we've continued to do original music. So coming here to New Orleans after never living here, living in Houston, Atlanta, and now New Orleans, it's been great for me, like, soaking up the culture and everything. Like, New Orleans is, I said earlier, very down home. I feel like people have been hospitable and welcoming to me. And as much as I love Atlanta, like, I really love Atlanta, the people are not the same. It's not that same, like, openness, like, come let me hug you, somebody that I don't really know. Mm-hmm. But they treat you like family. Now, at the same time, don't cross them because they will cut you or something else. I won't go there. But, like, the city really has embraced me, I would say. And as far as the music business, well, business is business.
Business is business.
I'm liking how you embrace in the city because I'm checking out those nice purple fingernails, which means a shout out to St. Hug. Oh, yeah, baby. I like that.
Oh, really? Like, is that what that means?
This is what I dealt with all through college.
I like that. You know, she's giving some homage to St. Hug.
Really?
You
know? I wasn't.
But that's
quite
the impact that St. Hug has. You don't have to think about us. It's just we're there.
Wow.
We're floating in your heart.
This is what I dealt with through college.
We're floating in your heart.
This is turning into a fundraiser.
You see, right? You see this right here? You see that purple?
He's got on the St. Hug shirt.
He's showing it right now.
What?
And she didn't mention the Falcons, so I'm going to also appreciate that. Yeah. As well.
No.
Shout out to IKEA. Shout out to IKEA. Yeah.
No, IKEA. I rep IKEA.
Shout out to IKEA.
Yeah.
Half my house IKEA. Shout out to IKEA.
Well, y'all, we're gonna close this part. I know. One more time, tell people where they can find Waterseed online and Facebook and all that good stuff.
Yeah, find us at waterseedmusic.com. Just Google Waterseed and you'll find out everything about us and come join us. You know, we'd like to have you in our family tree. So
absolutely.
Sweet. Appreciate it. Bryce, you?
So you can find us live every Sunday at Cafe Negril. It's with Easter Mueller's Twisted Dicks. It's called our Get Lucky Sunday Funky Jazzy Ass Dance Party. Sweet. From 6 to 10 at Cafe Negril. You can find us on the third Friday of every month at Spotted Cat. with my group called Buku Nola. You can catch me every Wednesday.
What time do you play at Spotted Cat?
Spotted Cat, 10 p.m.
Okay.
10 until. We normally go to about 3 o'clock because we rock the house. Every Wednesday, you can catch me with Delphia Marcellus and Uptown Jazz Orchestra at Snug Harbor. Shows at 8 and 10. And then you can also find us at the New Orleans Music Company, which is my entertainment company. That is www.thenomc.com. Twisted Dixie is www.twisteddixienola.com. And for the Arts NOLA, the Cultural Education Program, we're at artsnola.org.
Great.
And we're definitely, with Arts NOLA, we're definitely all about community partnerships. We have some great community partnerships in play right now, and we're continuing to expand. And our objective with, our objective with Arts NOLA, honestly, though, is to provide as much cultural and arts education in schools, specifically schools with underserved and underrepresented student populations as possible, because these things do not exist in our current charter school makeup here in New Orleans. So definitely reach out to us. We have some great partnerships, 4.0 schools, Tulane University, the Historic Collection, on and on and on, and we're making some great things happen.
Excellent, Bryce. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Thanks, all three of you. I really appreciate taking some time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been great.
You're welcome, man. So glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having us, friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Friends, a little brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. Come on back.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week. As always, hope you enjoyed that conversation there as part of our French Quarter Fest series. Really enjoyed chatting with Lou, Shalia, and Bryce. A lot of fun, very insightful. I think, as I said during the podcast only portion, if I remember right, maybe it was in the radio portion, we have so many great conversations in between the lines, in between the segments. I wish I could share with you more of the conversation, actually. But we got in pretty deep there with this one. Really like it. As I said, we'll have more from our French Quarter Fest series coming up. We're going to be taping another installment this Saturday, if you're listening currently, on February 9th at Louisiana Music Factory from 1 to 3:30. And we're going to be chatting with Corey Henry, I believe a couple members of the band Sweet Crude, as well as Bruce Sun Pie Barnes. So be on the lookout for those episodes as they roll out, and stop by the store and come see us. We'll be there sipping on a beer, sitting in the record store, conducting our interviews as we do. Friends, this is our parting shot here this week. We recorded that bit, this last show that you just heard, all the way back in December. So, of course, the whole Super Bowl, as we called it here in New Orleans, the Boycott Bowl, just happens. This is the first opportunity I've had to sort of talk about it. We talked about it last week, touching on some things. People from outside the area might be a little bit tired of hearing us in New Orleans complain about the Super Bowl and how we were robbed and whatever. So get over it, all right? I'm not saying us. I'm saying you. Get over it, because we're talking about it. How we go about doing things, it kind of is how we operate here in New Orleans and in the area. We make lemons out of lemonade, like only we really can here. It's part of our healing process. Look, you know, we dance at funerals, okay? I know it's kind of cliche, but that's the truth. So, you know, this is how we go about doing things. And it was so great to see all of the creativity and the humor that came out on Super Bowl Sunday. Now, if you're from outside the area, maybe you don't know, there was a call to, we were calling it the Boycott Bowl. The whole idea was, don't watch the Super Bowl, go out in town and go hang out. There were all kinds of great activities. You know, people just went to hang out at their corner bar that was not showing the game. Dat Dog, which is a local hot dog chain here, their uptown location on Magazine had a dunking booth where you could dunk the ref, dude dressed as an NFL ref. There was a big party at Fulton Street called the Boycott Bowl, all kinds of bands and stuff like that. French Quarter was packed. That's where I was. It was a second line, and just people kind of milling around. So we had, you know, sort of semi-formal activities all the way just down to people just hanging out in their Saints jersey somewhere. And as I said, it was great to see all of the creativity and the humor. This is how we do here in New Orleans. I'm sure that, I don't know, I haven't seen any estimates of numbers of how many people were out, but I'm sure it was in the tens of thousands. There were all kinds of great costumes and all that good stuff. What I wanted to mention is what I talked about last week, that making a point here is that we're talking about what really happened, or one of the outcomes, if you will, of the Saints not going to the Super Bowl because of that ridiculous call, is there was a lot of money that was taken away from the city. I heard from different people that a lot of folks originally from New Orleans that live outside the area or just fans of the city had actually started to make plans to, you know, you don't want to, you know, count your chickens before they're hatched. We were going to win the game, but we should have won the game. people canceled in droves. They were going to come here and watch a game, not in Atlanta, but watch the game in New Orleans to be with fellow New Orleanians and be with us here in the city to watch the game. So we're talking about money out of people's pockets. So this was a good thing about what happened on Sunday. One of my favorite parts about this and why we did what we did is, you know, go out and spend some money in town. And it helps out, maybe not so much the hotels, but it helps out the bars. It helps out the restaurants. I'm sure that there was a lot of sales of Saints gear and all of that good stuff. So it probably didn't really replace what the city would have made had the Saints gone to the Super Bowl, but it did put a little bit of money back into the coffers of people trying to make a living here in the city. And that's a good thing. Help out our friends in the service industry and things like that. So that was a real positive, aside just from the overall good vibe and things like that. Now, what I wanted to mention here, by the way, is that this was the lowest rated Super Bowl in 11 years. And even in some of the national media outlets are actually crediting what happened here in New Orleans for those low ratings. Now, normally here in New Orleans, the Nielsen ratings for Super Bowls are in the high 40s to the low 50s. As a matter of fact, even like a lot of Saints regular season games score in that range in the low 50s. So, for example, 2018, last year's Super Bowl, it was a 55 rating. Even the 2017 Super Bowl, which was the Pats, yeah, go figure, and the Falcons, the Dirty Birds, our arch rival, that was even a 48.4. Okay, so there you go. This time around, depending on, you know, who you believe or what you read, I should say, because it's right in the same range, it was either 26.1 or 26.2. Did you hear me? About half of what it normally is for a Saints regular season game or any other Super Bowl. There was one report, friends, as a matter of fact, that out of the 56 TV markets that Nielsen rates, New Orleans rated 56 out of 56. Now, one of the things that I always, you know, Louisiana, we can be kind of last in a lot of things, you know, number 47, 48, 49, 50, depending on which states we're competing against with things that we don't want to be at the bottom of the list. But man, this was one that where I was really happy to be at the bottom of the list. Who won the game? I didn't really watch. I didn't watch at all. But who won the day? New Orleans did, friends. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.